Did you see the stylish kids in the riot? Shoveled up like mocks, set the night on fire, wombles bleed, truncheons and shields. You know I cherish you, my love.
Welcome to the Young IPA Podcast. I'm James, this is Pete.
G'day everyone.
It is the 30th of April and this is episode 107. We've got a fun show for you guys coming up. We're going to be talking, it's one of our in-house IPA episodes, always a lot of fun.
IPA double shot.
Double shot indeed. We're going to be talking to the editor of the IPA Review and the host of the IPA's new podcast, the Looking Forward podcast, Scott Hargraves, is going to be talking us through the latest edition of the IPA Review, so looking forward to that.
Heaps of good stuff in there.
Heaps of good stuff, and we're also going to be talking to National Manager of the IPA's Generation Liberty program. I know she's an absolute hit with all of our members out there. Renee Gorman, she's going to be talking us through her op-ed today in the Daily Telegraph about a seminar, a workshop that went down at the University of Melbourne and a few other things that have caught her eye in the last week or so. So, yeah, fun show coming up. Now, last week we made a lot of fun about how boring this election is going to be, and apparently it's not going to be anymore because now the polls are like 51-49 and there was the leaders debate last night, so Pete and I have had a think and we've decided that we are going to try and find this election interesting.
Well, for a change, we've had a think.
Yes.
Just to clarify, 51% to the ALP, 49% to the coalition.
So it's very close, and this could be, like, again, I'm more, you know, I sound like aloof when I say this, but it's more about policy and philosophy than, you know, which party do I like more.
That's so deep, man.
Thank you, man. Let me play an acoustic guitar while I say that in the corner of a party. And anyway, but that's what it is. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of policy divides. There's not a whole lot of philosophical divides. I mean, you know, so there's that angle of it, but I guess it would be hilarious to see Bill Shorten lose the election from the position he started in.
That's right.
It was all over a few months ago.
Yeah, exactly right. This was just the leadership spill was just to find out who was going to be the PM that lost to Bill Shorten. Penny Wong made a good point actually the other night. She said the ALP had won from opposition only three times since World War II.
Right.
So that's an interesting stat, James.
Yes.
by the by. Yeah. So as you mentioned, the debate was...
Nina, write that one down.
As you mentioned, the debate was in Perth the other night.
Yep.
And I got
last night, actually.
Was it?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure it was the night before, but, you know, you say potato, I say...
It was last night.
I can guarantee you it wasn't.
Podcast bet, what are we doing right now? No, fine. Nina, fact check.
Fact checked. So, ABC is 16 hours ago, The Guardian 14 hours ago.
So they want to make it last night?
That was last night, I think, because 24 hours, that's like...
James is standing up right now like he's celebrating. And look, to be honest, this is a big moment for him to get one over me. What
doesn't
can I say?
A whole lot.
I guess I just move on quickly from these things.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that if Peter Gregory doesn't know when the election debate was, it kind of was a drop in a bucket, I would say. I want to actually point out that is a world-class move by Bill Shorten and Scott Morrison. When you don't want anyone to watch an election, schedule it against Game of Thrones because no one is going to pay attention. And I reckon there is millions of people out there right now who are like, wait, there was an election debate last night? What happened? It's just filling each other out in complete silence. If an election debate happens in a forest and there's no one around to hear it because they're all inside watching Game of Thrones, did it even happen?
Well, I'm only saying it happened because on the internet it said it did happen. a couple of points coming out of it.
And the internet's never been wrong.
Yeah, that's right. And they also came straight. They did it in Perth straight after an Eagles loss, which is always a bad move.
Yeah. But this crowd is sour.
Yeah, exactly right. So a couple of points to come out of the debate that was apparently last night. Scott Morrison said, "Who do you trust to manage a $2 trillion economy?" Bill Shorten said, "The Liberal government is only looking after the top end of town." So the two talking points that both major parties have been doing forever.
Yeah, exactly. They got to schedule the second debate in the fourth quarter of the AFL Grand Final this year.
That's right.
Like, that's how you do it.
Risk averse.
And then you have the election on like Christmas and then absolutely no one knows what's happening.
That's right. And I think one of the other reasons, James, that the polls have tightened up is because people are mistaking the IPA's 15 policies the coalition should implement for the coalition's actual policies.
Yes.
And as a result, their poll position is improving.
As long as we see some of those policies get in, we're all going to be happy.
I was going to ask, what did Evan say again about what was his prediction about who was going to win?
He said Labor, but it wasn't going to be as much of a blowout as people were suspecting.
Oh, really?
Which, so if it were held today, would be exactly the case.
So he's actually on target.
Yeah, he's got another one on target that I'm going to bring up later in the show. But let's move on, Pete, because you saw a few more election guffaws, I might say.
Well, we've got a few examples of politicians behaving badly over the last few days, which is always amusing for everyone. Apart from them, Labor Northern Territory Senate candidate Wayne Kurnoth has stood aside for sharing an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory that claims the world is being run by a secret society of Jewish shape-shifting lizards.
Mm.
Now, in one of the most Australian things ever, his name will remain at number 2 spot on the Labor's NT Senate ticket because the ballot papers have already been printed.
Yeah, it's like, mate, it's too far down. We've got to go back. I'm not going back to Quick Coffee.
The election's in a month.
I'm not going back to Officeworks. You can't make me.
And like, how many people are there in the Northern Territory? Just print them again.
Yeah, exactly. My goodness.
Ah, we've already printed them, mate.
Mate, that's done.
What are we going to do?
Yeah, everyone's made up their mind anyway. So I want to bring this up because we had it on the show a few weeks ago that David Icke, so the guy shared a David Icke video, like David Icke being the guy that thinks of this conspiracy.
Yeah.
I'm now starting to see why David Icke got his citizenship banned. There's a few politicians that were just like, he's making a few points. Yeah. They're like, we need to cross this one before it gets out of hand.
Well, the ALP were outspoken in banning him.
Yeah.
And now they've had to.
I would like to see this guy at that meeting. It's just like, I mean, we sure? I've already got tickets. Like, yeah. I'm not sure about the refund policy on these things.
Yeah, exactly right. Obviously, I mean, they saw the, what's the word? Splash he was making in the ALP and they didn't want him to come.
Yeah, exactly. We also had the leader of One Nation in Queensland getting a little too turned up, I would say.
That's my word for it.
A little too hyped. In a strip club in the US, the video's come out. He's now stepped down. And yeah, as brought up before, like Evan, he was right on that Labor would win and it wouldn't be as much of a blowout as people think.
Mm-hmm.
And Evan also predicted that politicians would try and mimic what they saw humans doing. And this seems to be a mimicking that went a bit awry for this guy. So he tried, he failed, but you know, at least he's trying, I guess.
That's right. This is a family podcast, so we can't go into too much detail about what he said and did. But this is One Nation Senate candidate for Queensland, Steve Dixon, who is the same bloke that we mentioned a few weeks ago, who was like so surprised about what he could regulate when he was in the Queensland.
Oh, is this the same guy?
Same bloke.
Yeah.
Same Al Jazeera sting. I don't know what...
This guy's got a bit of a theme of getting somewhere and then realising how much he can get away with.
He's not had a good trip to the States, yes. That's true. Although, I mean, he looked like he was having fun, but...
Yeah. It's a calm down.
So what was I going to say about this? Look, I'm not sure what the Qatari government has against One Nation, but they're giving them an absolute flaying. And my other thing that I would want to say about this, James... is hasn't Australia changed in 10 years? Because 10 years ago, going to a strip club was a huge electoral boon for Kevin Rudd.
Yeah, but it does seem this guy got up to a bit more things than Kevin Rudd got up to.
It's the footage. It's like, wow.
Yeah, like Kevin Rudd got to be very thankful that there was no footage of his reactions to seeing all that sort of stuff. So, so he's gone and, you know, we're still a few weeks away from the election. So hopefully we get a few more of these stories coming out because they're always hilarious to see these people go down.
Well, actually, there is one more, James.
Oh, wow.
Labor's been forced to reprint how to vote cards in the Melbourne seat of Goldstein following revelations it had preference.
Wait, Pete, who's reprinting how to vote cards? Well, we've come way too far.
The election's, it's far too close. What are we going to do? Print them again. I can't believe that. Anyway, after preference a candidate who runs a fan club for an anti... Like the same guy. The
David Icke.
Yep.
David Icke has much more of an influence over the Labor Party than I thought he did five minutes ago.
That's right. So just to clarify, this is an independent candidate, not a guy in the ALP, but the ALP preferenced him above other candidates.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
But
anyway, David Icke is playing much more of a role in this election than I'm personally comfortable with.
Well, yeah, to be pretty honest.
To be honest, David Icke has become a kingmaker in Australian politics.
Yeah.
He will decide whether or not you get a seat.
How many of our elected representatives or people who want to be elected representatives believe that the world is run by lizards?
Yeah.
Like, that's, I mean, it's more than
why
one.
Why are they running for politics then? Do they want to join the lizards? Like,
yeah.
If they genuinely think the world is run by lizards, why are you being a politician? Like, why are you sticking your neck up? Unless you think you are a lizard yourself. Maybe it's like, I need to be with my people.
It's pretty...
We need to get one of these people on the show and investigate their
theories. Well, that would be some interview.
Yeah.
All right, I'm done. I'll come back next week with more stuff.
We need to bring a dump button for that one. All right, I got another one here. Sorry. UN report has come out saying that a million species are at the risk of extinction. And this one boy, did the media pick up on this one, because nothing says clicks like the world is about to end. So really the media cycle got fueled on this. But basically it's a UN report to get leaks ahead of time. It's a summary for policymakers from a draft of a forthcoming report in the United Nations Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services. And if that doesn't get your blood pumping, I don't know what will. But anyway, basically they've thought about their own name. They've thought about how little anyone cares about the work that they do. And they say if we come out with a report saying a million species are at the threat of extinction, people are going to start paying attention. And they did. So, Pete, is the world ending? In your honest opinion, is the world ending?
Well, not soon.
No.
But it might.
One day the Earth will eat, the sun will eat the Earth.
That's what people say, yeah.
And a million
eat the Earth.
The sun will eat the Earth and a million species will be at risk of extinction if that happens.
Yep.
But I don't see it in the next couple of years. And this really brings up a thing of just, you know, doomsday prepping scenarios of just all these experts in their field, these scientists that come out and they say, we're all done. That's it for it. So a few ones here. Reason compiled a list of it. S. Dillon Ripley, the Smithsonian Institution, predicted in 1970 that in 25 years' time, so 1995, 80% of all the species of living animals would be extinct. That's a guy that works at the Smithsonian. You'd think you'd be able to trust him. Breaking news that they didn't. 1979, Oxford University biologist Norman Meyer stated in his book, The Sinking Ark, that 40,000 species per year were going extinct and then a million species would be gone by the year 2000. I mean, I could go on and on, but the point is, like, people are going to start predicting the end of the world because, you know, that's what, and the media cycle is going to pick up on it because it sells papers and everyone just needs to chill out a little.
Well, that's what humans do. If you look back throughout history, there's always been predictions of doom and Armageddon and all the rest of it. But there's that reason piece is really good. It has all these important facts and figures about how the number of species that have been lost isn't anywhere near as much as has always been predicted. So, and also a lot of species are insects, and I don't want to be insexist. But who cares?
Wow.
Most species in the world are insects. And I know there's things like, you know,
my apologies to the arachnid community for my co-hosts. Oh. Wild.
I hate spiders. Yeah, they can go. As long as they're spiders, I don't care.
All right, fair enough. Pete Strong, anti-spider stance. I will throw out this one as an alternative theory, though. So last week on the show, we were talking about how there was a lot of walruses in the Arctic.
Potentially. Population increases in walruses.
I was going to say, but there were some walruses that might have fallen to their deaths as a result of David Attenborough's film crew.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can't help but connect the dots that these walruses are dying and, you know, there's a lot of concern about their long-term health. And now a UN report comes out saying that all these other species are also at extinction. And David Attenborough is making a lot of documentary, is doing a lot of documentary shoots for his new documentary. So I'm just starting to say, we need to reassess the role of David Attenborough in our society. I think he's posing far too much of a threat to animal communities everywhere.
Well, I mean, correlation doesn't necessarily mean causation, but on the same token, you do the math.
Yes, exactly. I just want to say to our listeners out there, if you do watch a David Attenborough documentary this weekend, you are part of the problem. So do with that what you will.
That was a very brave point.
Thank you.
Right, so moving on to...
Speaking of brave points.
Well, yes. Moving on to... another environmental Armageddon story. So you might have noted over the last week or two, Brendan O'Neill, friend of the show on two occasions, is now the target of the mob for a piece he wrote in Spiked about Greta Thunberg. I think we decided the surname was.
And it's up to us.
I think that, apologies if that's incorrectly pronounced. Yeah. So he wrote this piece about how, you know, so Greta Thunberg is this Swedish 16-year-old woman who goes around the world talking about how, you know, addressing parliaments. She started the school kids climate strike, effectively, that we recently had in Australia. That's a global movement that she started, and she goes all around the world, you know, making these tearful speeches about how the world's going to end and stuff. And, you know, good on her. She's a young kid. She's entitled to her opinion. And, you know, I don't agree with her, but a lot of people have opinions when they're 16 years old that I don't agree with, including myself. Anyway, so Brendan O'Neill wrote this piece where he's, you know, I'll read a little bit of it. Anyone who doubts about the green movement is morphing into a millenarian cult should take a close look at Greta Thunberg. This poor young woman increasingly looks and sounds like a cult member. The monotone voice, the look of apocalyptic dread in her eyes, the explicit talk of the coming great fire that will punish us all for our eco-sins. Now, as you can imagine, this copped a huge backlash amongst the punters, and caused Brendan O'Neill...
Well, not so much a punters as a political class, I'd say.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. Okay, yeah, good point. that's...
I'm helping.
Yeah, good stuff, good stuff. That's all, it's all helpful. And now he wrote this Instagram piece where he said that, you know, basically I'm allowed to say this. I think that you're using this child as a front for your views and stop trying to shame me. I think he's perfectly designed to deal with the outrage mob, Brendan O'Neill.
Yeah, Yeah, so Brendan O'Neill, never been a shrinking violet, I'd say.
I wouldn't say it.
When we were talking to him on the show, he'd just written about the singer Lees and like how...
That's right.
Yeah, so he's a kind of a guy who will talk about things. He will take positions that few others will certainly devote an op-ed to. That's not to say that's why he does write those articles. He obviously believes everything he writes, but yeah, he's really cool. But do you want to talk about Greta Thunberg for a while? Because like, mm-hmm. as you said... I've got no qualms against her. Like, you know, she's saying what she believes and she's trying to bring attention to a cause. And, you know, that is open debate in society and stuff. Like, again, it's not a cause I agree with, but, you know, good on her for doing stuff. It's the adults that, like, deify her and turn her into a celebrity and encourage her. And, you know, she's not booking herself at any of these government conferences. She's being booked. And that's the kind of stuff where I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
If you're an adult, you are deciding the rest of this girl's life is being decided right now. Like, she won't escape anything she does right now. Adults are making her into an international celebrity, taking away that aspect of her childhood because apparently if a child says something, then it's much more meaningful than if anyone else says something.
That's the thing. It's weaponizing children for your political views, and it's also shielding you from criticism because it's more difficult to criticize.
Well, you can't insult Greta. That's 16. Right. Why would you do that?
That's right, and she also suffers from Asperger's disease, which is another reason why O'Neill copped backlash was because it's like you're having a go at this girl who's got, you know, difficulties or whatever.
And it's not. He's having a go at the people that use that girl to their own political ends.
That's right. And you can see this use of, you know, these, you know, kids basically across a whole range of lefty viewpoints, which is, we should note that and not be afraid to, you know, attack that when we see it. I think, and the other thing which helps him is that he's not like a big corporate. He's not just some naive person who's got a view. Like, he knows exactly what they're doing. He's like, there's no way I'm apologising. You know, never apologise, obviously. And interesting story.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll keep monitoring that one. All right, cool. We're going to go to our interviews now with Scott Hargraves and Renee. Before we do, first off with the Scott Hargraves interview. So we're going to be talking to the new IPA Review. Now, I just want to point out to our listeners that the IPA Review, as well as being only available to IPA members, if you're not an IPA member yet, there are two articles that are available on our website at ipa.org.au. Just find the IPA Review editions. You can go read Zach Gorman's article and one other, which names escape me, but there are two articles that are publicly available. And if you like those and you want to read some of the other ones that are going to be in the review, make sure you're signing up as an IPA member. We do all the details of how you can go about it in the interview, so make sure you're sticking around for that. We're talking to Renee about her op-ed, and I'll run through a few of the other things the IPA has been up to in the last week. It's mainly some of the more fallout from the Peter Reid case. We've got Matthew Lesh, who'd been monitoring the case from the very outset. He gave his thoughts to the Spectator Australia. That's adjunct fellow Matthew Lesh. And you've also got a bit of Jennifer Marahasi talking about a bit of reef science as well. That's all available on ipa.org.au, as well as this podcast and the IPA's Looking Forward podcast. So thank you so much for listening to both of those or either of those. Please listen to both of those. And also subscribe, make it part of your feed on any of the podcast apps that you use. And if you are listening through Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review. Maybe leave us a comment for the show and so on. And make sure you're telling all your friends and family about the show to spread the word. Now, Nina, if people want to get the review or if people like the podcast, they want to support the work we're doing, they hear what Renee's doing with Generation Liberty, they want to get involved and help us financially, where can people go if they want to take any of those measures?
The easiest way is just to visit our website, theipa.org.au, and click on the join button. And starting as low as $22 per year, you can become one of the loudest voice of freedom in Australia.
That was very energetic. Ding, ding, ding. Ding, ding, ding. All right, let's go to those interviews now. Okay, we now welcome back onto the show the national manager of the IPA's Generation Liberty program, Renee Gorman, the scourge of university administrators everywhere. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on again.
All right, cool. So, Renee, you have an article in the Daily Telegraph this morning. You are talking about something that came out of a seminar at the University of Melbourne recently. Do you want to talk us through what happened?
Yeah, so the student union at Melbourne University ran a series of workshops. A lot of them were quite questionable. One of them was demything Antifa,
okay,
which is pretty interesting. But
I'd go to that. That would be interesting, yeah. I reckon.
The myth-busting Antifa or something, so trying to prove that Antifa's not all that bad. But one of the ones that was most concerning is one that pretty much stated that white male students should not speak during tutorials or during university classes in order to provide a space for female and non-white students.
Now, that also included people that, is it look like they'll vote Liberal?
Yeah, so one of the other descriptors was anyone who looks like a Liberal voter, which I'm not sure what that means.
The people that wear like college shirts and a blazer jacket to uni, they're gone.
Yeah, but can a woman look like a Liberal voter?
What about a non-binary person? Can they vote for Liberal as well?
Yeah, I guess it means once you express a conservative or even libertarian opinion, you suddenly look like a Liberal voter. Because when I was at uni, you know, I was doing a graphic design degree first up, and it was still in my hipstery phase. I had pink parts of my hair. Mm-hmm. I wore very grungy clothing. I grew up in Brunswick, but I had conservative views. So would I have been allowed to speak in class?
Who knows? You are releasing one of the great secrets to the world that Renee Gorman actually used to be a hippie.
I don't know if hippie.
Hipster.
Hipster, I would definitely say hipster.
Two very different things.
Well,
let's step back for a second. So what are these workshops? Are these university managed or are these student managed?
So these are run by the student union. And what the really big problem, which I pointed out in my article, is that it was funded by all students. So in 2011, the Gillard government introduced something called SSAF fees. So they couldn't really reintroduce compulsory unionism because the Howard government had pretty much banned it. So what they did is introduce compulsory unionism by stealth. So all students pay around $293 a semester, and that money is supposed to go towards sports and genuine services for students.
And frothies.
Booze cruises, yeah. That kind of thing.
But most of the time it gets spent on activism and by far-left courses by unions. So at Sydney University, this money was used to buy pizza for protesters in Paris. It was also used to purchase a giant inflatable rat for a protest, because that's definitely what students need in services, is a new giant inflatable rat.
Yeah, that serves all the students.
So any student at the University of Melbourne have financially gone and supported a workshop where basically one of the takeouts is white males should just stop speaking.
Yeah, pretty much. So you've got white males paying for a workshop that tells them to be quiet and actively discriminates against them. One of the other problems I have with this is I personally find it really, really patronising to women to say the mere thought of a man talking in a tutorial is going to disturb and hurt them so much that they feel that they can't speak anymore. It's really this kind of reverse feminism that sees women as pure and fragile, and that's not the kind of feminism that's I like. That's not real empowerment.
So your position as national manager of Generation Liberty, you must receive lots of complaints like this or lots of reports of stuff like this from students.
Actually, before we move on, can I just get one thing on the record? To me, that seminar didn't go far enough. I would just ban anyone from speaking in tutorials. just pure silence. Let's just get our work done and get the hell out of
James
it.
James was a bit like, I mean, this is not all bad.
Yeah.
It's like, a start.
Yeah. When it said, we should stop white males, I was just waiting for more people to be banned from speaking until we got to literally everyone.
So you just want a little printout of all the information so you can, go home and watch Game of Thrones.
Exactly. Well, 100 feet. Come on.
Well, you could be onto something.
All right. Anyway, so you can read Renee's article on ipa.org.au this morning. So make sure you're going and reading that.
That's right. So I was just saying, in your position as national manager of Generation Liberty, stuffed it up again. You must receive lots of reports of stuff like this from students around the country. Is that right?
Yeah. So I constantly get messages from students and also my campus coordinators reporting to me the crazy stuff that their union is doing. Also, one of the big problems is that, yes, other clubs can get access to these fees, but the union has to tick off on it.
Okay.
So, and they have to approve of your spending, or they have to approve of you using spaces. So, this happened to me when I tried to use a space to screen the red pill. That was a union space. They banned us. They banned the event. And you see multiple times like this, liberal clubs and conservative clubs, they generally check over whether they're following the rules precisely every single time for any excuse to not give them the funds that every group should have a right to, because everyone pays into SSAF. But really the real solution right now is that we should remove this fee completely because it just continues to get misused.
Okay, so I think what we also want to ask you about is the French Review, because you spend a lot of time at universities dealing with stuff like this, the French Review recently, on freedom of speech at university campuses. What's your take on that?
It's a bit of a mixed bag. So generally I was happy it came out that they were concerned about a lot of the policies and loose language around these policies that did restrict freedom of speech for students, but it also did state that there's no free speech crisis on campus, which I happen to disagree with quite strongly as someone who's been on campus. I'm concerned that they actually didn't get enough reports and enough from actual students. I don't know if any students were actually asked to make a submission, which is concerning to me because the people we should be talking to about this are the students. It shouldn't be bureaucrats and government people just talking to their friends or investigating it themselves without talking to the students themselves.
So what would you want to see come out of this? What were you hoping for? And then what's the sort of future for this thing for Renee Gorman?
What I would like to see come out of it would be something like the Chicago principles. So the statement made by Chicago University about free speech on campus, which very clearly outlines, you know, no deplatforming, speakers are always allowed to speak, students have free speech. And many universities in America have embraced this this statement. And I really wish that Australian universities would too. I also hope that there would be some acknowledgement of the bias of unions and how much power they have over students and maybe some investigation there, but we're yet to see what will really happen.
Rightio. Well, that sounds great. Now, we want to move on to another topic. You had an interview with Christina Summers a few weeks ago for the Young IPA podcast, which was awesome. People can find it on their, what is it, podcast platforms?
Any podcast app you have. It's just only a few episodes ago, and they were really good, and we got a lot of good feedback for it.
That's James's area, that stuff.
Yeah, I'm the technical man, PC ideas guy.
Yeah, I'm the creative one. Yeah. So what was, name? You're a massive fan of Christina Summers, so am I. I was pretty jealous, I'm not going to lie. What was it like meeting her?
Wonderful. She was very, very warm, not at all intimidating. You know, you're always a little bit nervous meeting someone you admire, but she was completely warm and embracing and happy to see me. Very eager to talk. Like, she had just gone through, I think she had just got off a flight or she'd just done something else. So she was pretty tired. But as soon as we put up the podcast equipment, she was raring to go and raring to talk and was super lovely. Gave me free tickets afterwards, which was really nice of her. But yeah, that ended up with me going to the Melbourne show, which was a little bit of a debacle.
Yeah, so let's talk about that, because she's in Australia for these like discussions on contemporary feminism with Roxane Gay, I think her name was. Yeah.
Yes.
And so talk us through what happened at the Melbourne event, because that led to a pretty good op-ed from you.
Yeah, so at the Sydney event, it was much worse. So at the Sydney event, a few nights before, there was stamping of feet. I heard there was throwing of things. Every single time that Christina Hoff Summers spoke, it was pretty much just an angry mob. And Melbourne wasn't much better, maybe a little bit less crazy, but pretty much these people, it seems that they had turned up just to hear Roxane Gay, and whenever they heard an opinion they didn't like, they got really upset. But it was a debate, so you should be prepared to hear different views. And I think it points to a real problem in society right now where people can't hear views that they disagree with, and that is highlighted by the fact that after the event, multiple people started a petition to get their money back because, you know, Christina Hoff Summers hurt their fifis.
I've never heard that before.
So it was absolutely ridiculous. And I think it's really worrying about the state of feminism because Christina Hoff Summers says this, the only time in the past when feminism has made massive strides for women's rights was when conservatives and progressive women work together. But right now the form of feminism that's prevalent is exclusive. It is very, very almost authoritarian. And anyone who disagrees with them is kind of pushed out.
That's right. I mean, it always strikes me as kind of weird that sort of more liberal type feminists get so much abuse from like people who say we should respect women more and have more female voices in public discourse. Yet when we have one like Christina Summers, they cop, you know, such vile abuse.
Yeah, I think it is really concerning. And what she was saying was not at all extreme at all. She's not, and she doesn't really have extreme views. She's a registered Democrat. She was called a white supremacist by Roxane Gay when she has Jewish heritage.
Great.
So it was all just absolutely bizarre. And a new article has come out and it was revealed by the organiser of the event that Roxane Gay was just a nightmare to deal with. She wouldn't accept any of the adjudicators that they put forth that were female. So they ended up with pretty much the owner of the company doing it. I think pretty sure he was a refugee. And she wasn't happy with that as well. So he got booed when in the Sydney show just because it was a man on stage.
Right.
So it was pretty crazy.
Right, that's a tough position to be in. All right. So we've been talking about it sporadically through this interview, the IPA's Generation Liberty program. And in case we don't have, in case we do have listeners that aren't members of Generation Liberty yet, what is Generation Liberty and how can people get involved?
So Generation Liberty is the campus outreach program of the Institute of Public Affairs. One of the main parts of the program is right now we have 13 campus coordinators all over Australia who run events, network with student groups and try and push for free speech on campus and a campus defined by intellectual diversity.
Yeah, and have actual debates. Like we've been talking about these fake debates and they have actual debates like, you know, there's been Generation Liberty versus Socialist Alternative, stuff like that.
Even more interestingly, we're having a few debates coming up where Generation Liberty is actually versing the Liberal Club. So mm-hmm. we had an event in Adelaide called the Nanny State Debate where Generation Liberty debated the Liberal Club about compulsory bike helmets. We've also got a debate coming up in WA about gender quotas, and the opposition to that is going to be, again, the Liberal Club is in favour of gender quotas, or at least some of them are. So we're getting some really interesting mix and we're getting a real voice for liberty and kind of libertarian ideas on campus and a push to explore ideas in a different way, which is really exciting. And we're getting, you know, a push up in membership because of that. And I'm really excited for the future.
That sounds really cool. And it feels like in those debates, they could be probably a bit more respectful than a lot of other debates that are had on university campuses. And there can be disagreement and back and forth. And
without anything getting thrown at a stage.
That's right. And people end up smarter for the experience of having had their views challenges, maybe.
Yeah. So Angus, who's at Adelaide University, told me that many of the Liberal Club
campus coordinator, Angus.
Yeah.
Cool.
Angus, our campus coordinator at Adelaide University, told me that after the debate, multiple Liberal students came up and said, "I actually agree with you. You changed my mind on this issue." So that's really great. That's what we want to see. We want to see students testing their ideas and changing their mind.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. So, yeah, head on over to the IPA Generation Liberty Facebook page. Make sure you, if you're at uni right now, and we do have a campus coordinator at university, make sure you're getting involved, coming up to these events, going and hanging out with them because they're a really cool program. All right, Renee, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Renee.
Okay, we now welcome back onto the show one of our favorites here at the IPA, Young IPA Podcast, the editor of the IPA Review, Scott Hargraves, and host of the IPA's new podcast, The Looking Forward Podcast, coming out on Wednesday. Scott, welcome back to the show.
Great to be back. Thank you, Pete and James.
All right, no problem.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about it because one of the great things that the IPA does, one of our main, one of our big projects is always the IPA Review. It's been something that's been going on since 1943, and the new review is just about to hit letterboxes right now. So we thought we'd bring on Scott, preview the edition, and I want to point out before we get into some of the articles that are going to be in this edition of the review, the IPA Review is only available to members of the IPA. So if you do want to sign, if you do want to get this review, if you hear some of the articles that we're going to be talking about in this interview and you want to read them, go to the IPA website. Call us at 9600-4744. Sign up as a member and you're going to be able to get this review. So let's start.
03 if you're outside Victoria.
Yes, 03 if you're outside Victoria.
Plus 61 if you're outside Australia.
Oof, we got some international listeners. That's cool. So Scott, let's talk about the review because there's a lot of not so much preview or just stuff that people need to be thinking about in the coming up to the federal election. So do you want to start off with John Lloyd's article about industrial relations?
Yeah, no, I'll do that. It is our subtitle is Journal of Politics and Culture. It's not just politics, and a lot of it is providing that cultural context. But certainly, John Lloyd, former Public Service Commissioner, formerly the Australian Building and Construction Commission, esteemed public servant, has come back to the IPA now, and he's an expert in, amongst other things, industrial relations. And he has closely examined the industrial relations agenda of the ALP and its relationship to the ACTU's industrial agenda. And we did have a little bit of fun with the hero image, we called it when Billy Met Sally. And it looks a little bit like the old When Harry Met Sally because they really are just marching in policy terms in lockstep. Mm-hmm. And Australia is already, I think, 80th in the world on the capacity of our IR system to actually achieve productivity and meaningful economic growth, and there's a long, long list of things that the ACTU wants and that Bill Shorten has promised to deliver if elected, which will make that worse.
I did notice that was quite a funky cover for or cover page for that article. Who thought of that? Whose idea was that?
We have a wonderful guy, actually, Richard Conrad, who helps us out. Sammy is our wonderful designer who gave effect to that. And now we get a lot of ideas. These ex-journos, you know, they've worked on newspapers and as Richard has, and they're always thinking, what's the best pick to go with this story? And that was his idea.
There you go.
Yeah, so let's talk about that angle, because a lot of times the unions seem to be, you know, on the side of the workers, and then the people that are against the union seem to be on the side of big business and, you know, the money grabbers at the top. But really, if we listen to the union's agenda, all that's really benefiting is current union members and not necessarily people who are out of work and people who are looking for work. And I think that's what John Lloyd's article really starts talking about.
Indeed. And he points out the irony that this is at a time when, you know, private sector unionisation rates have never been lower. So as the influence of the union movement actually in workplaces where workers have a choice has never been lower, their hands on the policy levers have never been stronger, and even at times there's been a healthy tension between the ACTU and the ALP about you know, what the economy needs versus what the unions need, but we're not even seeing that tension at the moment.
This is the thing: when you're the editor, you've got to be an expert on everyone's piece. So good stuff there, Scott. To be able to answer that.
I love John's work. He's got his knowledge and understanding of these things, and his control of the facts and figures is awesome.
All right, so we'll move on to, it's always important to cover off on the boss's piece. John Roscombe had a great piece on the new Churchill biography by Andrew Roberts. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, well, as James said on the Looking Forward podcast, we've actually interviewed Andrew Roberts.
That's right, yeah.
John and Chris Berg and I interviewed him.
And that interview is still available, so just go through the history of the Looking Forward. All the available episodes are still up on all good podcast apps, so if you do want to listen to that one, just go back and look for it.
No, he's a great man, former guest of the IPA here in Australia, historian with a strong sort of military bent. Churchill Walking with Destiny. John was much, much taken with it and has written a ripper review, because it's putting it all in a bit of context. Like, there's already been 1,000 biographies of Churchill. But as John said, you know, Andrew Roberts has just added so much value, and there's so much contemporary relevance. There's a quote, one of the quotes we pulled out for the magazine was John saying, "It's impossible to follow the hopelessness of the British cabinet in the 1930s without thinking about how the Conservative Party is managing Brexit." So, lots of contemporary relevance for John.
Yeah, so you say there's like 1,000 biographies of Churchill already. So what made this one stand out from the rest for John and maybe for you?
Well, I think it's certainly that sense of the subtitle is Walking with Destiny. So Andrew also pointed out that he did have access to some previously unreleased archives, including those actually of the King's notes of his meetings with Churchill over a long period of time, and they actually solved a few historical puzzles. So that's important, and that it would itself have been reason enough for Andrew to produce this book. But honestly, it's understanding how the character of the man, a very, you know, in many ways a difficult character, you know, incredibly stubborn and sure of his own opinions as a way, perhaps only someone who comes out of that sort of British aristocracy could be, but, you know, tempered in war. An amazingly long political career where he'd made massive, massive mistakes, amongst which you might include Gallipoli, which Roberts talks about. But, yeah, so it's the link between how Churchill's character was tempered and then what he was able to achieve in World War II. And as John said, you know, when leadership is in short supply, we really need to understand these things, and you also need to stand up for the business of history, that these things matters. You know, how battles were fought matter, how governments were formed matters.
That's right. And just on that point of there being a lot of Churchill biographies out there, I think this was described by the New York Times as the greatest single volume history of Churchill.
Indeed it was.
So, you know, it is worth a read.
And I've read it too, and I'd concur with that.
There you go. Well, get the book and then read the review of it. All right, well, let's also talk about the cover story. So cover story, always a big thing for the IPA. So this one is Cities and Freedom, and it's an article by a non-IPA staff member, and it's looking at the history of the cities in Australia and just how they've come about. So do you want to talk about what you saw in that article that got it the front page?
Yeah, so this is with Professor John Carroll. Andrew Bushton and I sat down with John to discuss his book, Land of the Golden Cities, and because it was such a different take. You know, there is a lot of things that need fixing in Australia. And that's why the IPA exists. Yeah. You know, there's a lot that we need to focus on to make Australia great again.
He told me Australia's not a libertarian paradise.
No, strangely
there's
not.
There's a reason we made that 20 policies list that went viral. That's for sure.
But John's a sort of an optimistic character, and he's making the case that in our cities we've perhaps got something right. You know, we haven't seen some of the pathologies of cities in, you know, in other parts of the world, you know, over-regulated, you know, terrible housing. You know, we know particularly in Sydney and Melbourne we're groaning with growth and there are issues to be fixed. But John says, you know, there's something in the Australian character. He is a sociologist. He thinks almost like we have a talent for managing it, for managing this growth, for living together, and entrepreneurship. He talks about, as an admitted denizen of the inner city, he just loves walking down Gertrude Street in Fitzroy and seeing people throwing money at new cafes. It's like, you know, why would anyone need to build another cafe in Fitzroy? But they still do, and they pop up and they disappear, and there's this wonderful sort of energy that's released by cities that needs to be preserved in our culture. So we need our mining and resources, but if we can't make cities work, then we're going to be in a bit of trouble.
That sounds like a really interesting read, which I must admit I haven't got to yet, because you know we sort of hear Australian cities are a bit nondescript. You know, we'd like to slag them off a little bit, but this is obviously a positive story.
Yeah, so it's the old most livable city. And, you know, it's also a warning to preserve that culture, to preserve. And he talks about unifying themes like Anzac Day and, you know, the importance of these, you know, national symbols, the way that we can integrate people from all over the world into the lives of our cities and make it a great place. So you know, these things matter from a public policy point of view. You know, he didn't actually say this, but it was, you know, it was sort of like, well, I'll give us, you know, 8 out of 10, and, you know, so pause for a moment. You know, Andrew and I challenged him a bit, Bushy especially, who's, you know, seen the city that of Melbourne that he grew up in, you know, transformed incredibly, particularly because of growth and urbanisation and densification. And so Bushy pushes him a bit for those who are worried about those things. We've transcribed the interview. This is something a bit different in the review. We've had a go at it, so I'd commend that to you. And, yeah, even if you disagree with John Carroll, you'll find something for you in there.
Excellent.
Stepping away from public policy and more towards culture, how does that marry with this, like, this sort of mythology of Australia sort of sees itself as, you know, it's the country. It's like this, Victoria's got a strong bushrangers history in Queensland. Like, we think about the Banjo Paterson poems. And yet he says that Australia's got a really proud city history, which doesn't seem to marry the two together.
Yeah, so that was that is always been the tension, that, you know, this country that's, you know, incredibly urbanized. Our foundational myths were rural, and I guess that's what he's saying. I think what he's getting at as a sociology is that's fine up to a point, but you need to build new myths. You need to do that work, and that's why he wanted to write that book about our cities, to say that this matters too. This is where most people live. So he's not denigrating the rural myths. He's not denigrating Australia's history, but he's just saying this is where we live now, and we need to appreciate it.
Very, very interesting stuff. Now, I've got a question about the final piece in the review, Strange Times by James Bolt. I heard a rumour that you had to wait a while before receiving this. A, is that true? And B, was it worth the wait?
Oh yeah, mate. It can be a bit tense at times.
That's
like,
right.
Like, yeah. James, how's it going? How's it going? And it's not. I don't think it's the writing. I think it's just that sort of moment of inspiration that he's sweating on. Or yeah. You know, while
the Sistine Chapel was delayed by a few years as well. I just want to point out to the people listening at home.
And
like genius works in crazy ways.
That's right. And it is called Strange Times. It's about some of the insanity we see in the world. And maybe James's problem is that, you know, it's choosing. Choosing.
There was a long list of things, but I was just waiting for the ride. Yeah, it's just, well, I don't want to talk about it. It's just, you know, just read it.
James has got all caught.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't want to give away the punchline. And also, it's another ripper illustration by Sammy Turon. Always something to look forward to in the IPA review is James's column at the end.
Yeah, allegedly. Anyway, so Pete and I have talked about the articles that we want to talk about and one article I don't want to talk about. But anyway, are there any others that you really thought were interesting?
So there's another review, of course. Professor Augusto Zimmermann has done a lovely piece on free speech, which puts into context the French review. He'd actually written it before the French review into free speech on campus came out. But... He did note that, and it gives this history, I guess, of all the challenges to free speech and academic inquiry on campus. He goes through things like the fight against the Ramsey Center for Western Civilization, the efforts to stop Bjorn Lomborg coming to the UWA, which is close to home for Augusto, and he pulled out this ripper quote, which I had to use in the magazine. The poor old Vice Chancellor of UWA, who actually thought that Bjorn Lomborg, it would be wonderful if he set up a consensus centre in Australia. He said, the work of the Australian Consensus Centre is important to Australia's future, and then goes on to explain in his media release, unfortunately that cannot happen here. So he personally thought it was fantastic, but he got gang tackled by the usual array of academics and moaners and, you know, student unions, and he couldn't do it.
Every 2 weeks we put a Bjorn Lomborg piece in Hay, and I always think, could have been written in Australia.
Yeah, we could have had him, mate. Yeah. Now, there was $4 million sitting on the table,
yep.
And the universities walked away from, just as they're walking away from Ramsey, it's pathetic, and as well as persecuting visiting speakers. So nice little piece from Augusto there.
God forbid we research the best way to spend foreign aid money.
Yeah, exactly, or just think about different climate catastrophes that aren't climate change for 5 seconds.
Yeah, and maybe
can't have that in Australia.
Focus on things like malaria.
It's an alt-right conspiracy.
Absolutely. All right, Scott Hargraves, thanks so much for joining us on the show. So once again, this is the IPA Review. It's one of the best things the IPA does every single year, and you can only get it if you are a member of the IPA. So make sure you go to ipa.org.au or calling us at 03-9600-4744. Sign up as an IPA member today. And along with all the other things you get as an IPA member, you also get the IPA Review. So, Scott, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, mate.
Okay, thank you to Scott Hargraves and Renee Gorman for those interviews. Really interesting stuff. Make sure you all sign up as IPA members so you can get your hands on that IPA Review, because it is good reading, except for the last article. Anyway, let's fly through some stories that have made us laugh this week, Pete. And I think the one that went the most viral, at least, was the cafe in Melbourne with the Mantax. Do you want to talk us through that one?
I can talk you through that one. This cafe is actually located in the same suburb that I live in, and I didn't realise it was there. So that shows you how much I've got my finger on the pulse.
Yes, but man on the street, man among his people.
A vegan feminist.
To be fair to Pete, it was a cafe and not a pub. Had it been a pub, Pete would have been all over it.
Yeah, then I would have known it was there. A vegan feminist cafe in Australia called Handsome Her had been imposing an 18% gender surcharge on men and given women priority seating, has closed down. Unfortunately, at the time the cafe's management claimed the attention left them jam-packed, at the time of opening that is, left the cafe, claimed the attention left them jam-packed with customers showing their support. I should point out in the interest of accuracy that the extra surcharge was optional and only for 1 week of every month, and the proceeds did go to charity. So that's all the details, to be fair. A notice on the cafe's website said it is closing down. This has created news all around the world, actually. And it's always sad when a small business closes down, James. And how any cafe stays open with penalty rates and regulation is a mystery to me. Gillette, of course, Gillette alienated all their market, but the cafe only alienated half of it. So they're a bit unlucky with all that. That's it. They've closed down.
Yeah. So I got a few things. So one, yeah, crazy media coverage. Like this got picked up in the UK media and the US media, just this tiny little cafe in Brunswick, Australia. And you just wonder, like, why does everyone care so much about this? Like, I get the whole, like, well, they tried to put in a man tax and look what happens. But, you know, yeah, I don't like businesses closing down either. I do want to take umbrage with you saying that it alienated half of its customers. I reckon slightly less than half, because this would have been, you know, they didn't alienate women and they certainly didn't alienate male allies who really would like to go to that cafe and sit by themselves and give everyone a big smile and talk about how this is the best cafe in the world and they just totally support what they're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've got this image of like these two women on one table just, you know, having a coffee and him and like some guy coming over going, isn't this cafe great? Didn't you see me sitting here at this cafe? And you'd be wondering, like, why am I at this cafe? I'm a guy, but it's just so great.
Can I pay double
surcharge? Can I get the number?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. That's the source of a lot of this.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing is there's ways to, you know, I don't want to see a business close down, so I try to think of a way to brainstorm how we could have kept Handsome Her open for a little bit longer.
Okay.
And one of the things I thought we could do, my best idea was we turn those tweets with clap emojis between every word into legal tender. Because then Handsome Her would have been the most successful cafe in history.
Yeah.
Just like, this is fantastic. If you make that legal tender, that place would have never closed down.
It's a very interesting take on monetary theory, James. Yeah. And I'm sure that, you know, Zimbabwe will try that at some point. But
not a whole lot of clappy emoji hands for the Zimbabwe government. So I don't think that's going to really help them too much.
Let's put that in the maybe pile.
Yeah.
So the priority seating one is creepy for me.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe putting certain people at the front of the bus.
Yeah, Rosa Pete.
And at the back of the bus. Pretty creepy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the whole thing. It's just, but now we're doing it with good intentions.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, you can't hate it. All right, I got another one for you. Speaking of good intentions. So there were all these climate protests down in London recently. This is not related to Greta Thunberg, but it's basically the Extinction Rebellion protests have been happening. They are, you know, blocking key routes through London and making, you know, a nuisance for themselves. Emma Thompson was in Los Angeles at the time. She saw the protest. She wanted to get involved with it. British actress Emma Thompson. So, you know, you just think about ways that you can get involved in the protest when you're 5,400 miles away from it, and it's about climate rally, and you don't really want to, you know, contribute to the climate rally. So maybe, you know, maybe a financial donation, maybe you could Skype in. Mm-hmm. But no, Emma Thompson decided to fly 5,400 miles from Los Angeles to London to take part. And she said, if I could fly cleanly, I would. So we kind of told her, because if she could fly cleanly, she would.
It's like, we need one of AOC's trains everywhere.
Yeah.
They need to go international.
Yeah, exactly. The ones that go to Hawaii, that's the first stop, and then let people off, and then go straight to London so you can protest climate change.
That's just the thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like we can't really live the way we do now without fossil fuels.
Yeah, exactly. But just Skype, Emma, just Skype. And then you think like, okay, well, maybe Emma Thompson had a role in this protest that simply couldn't be done via Skype or through call or through any other communication service.
Potential.
So, she stood on top of a pink boat and read a love poem to the earth.
Well,
in person doing the love poem to the earth, are you even a climate warrior?
Do we have any grabs from this love poem to the earth?
I do not have any grabs from this love poem to the earth. All I can think, maybe it was just so beautiful that it melted every single camera there, but I haven't seen it. Definitely couldn't Skype in for that.
I think that she was very brave to do that.
Yeah, the other part of it is important. If she did Skype in, you're not getting Instagram likes when someone's holding up a laptop with your face on it. You need to be there if you really want to get trending on Twitter.
That's true.
A few more of these tweets.
Yep. You're big on those this week.
They annoyed the hell out of me.
Well, it's good on Emma Thompson for being brave enough to pollute the environment to go to that protest. All right.
Okay, we got one final story here. So this one over in the US. So Rayona Oliver is this rapper in, New Orleans. And, you know, she had a bit of a busy day. She was feeling unwell. Her son needed to go to school. And so she ordered a Lyft, which is, if you don't know what it is, it's basically a rival company to Uber, L-Y-F-T. So she ordered a Lyft to take her child to school. So far, so good. That Lyft driver promptly then took the child to a police station, reported the mother, and then the police came and arrested the mum.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, this is exactly what happened.
Why did the... I thought you were going to say someone dobbed her in, like some...
The Lyft driver dobbed her in.
Yeah,
the
Lyft
driver
I mean,
was immediately like, well, this can't happen. There are so many things that are bizarre decisions with this. All right, so first off, Lyft has a policy against drivers picking up unaccompanied minors.
Okay.
That's a private organization policy. So, you know, like, so this Lyft driver broke the company's policy in the course of doing this. If you're a Lyft driver and you're not comfortable with this, which, you know, I'm sure there are people listening that wouldn't be comfortable with what this rapper did, and surely the response would be, if you're the Lyft driver, I'm not taking this ride.
Yeah.
I'm going about my business.
Because it's, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Instead, what I'm going to do, because I really care about this child's safety and well-being and, you know, all these other things, I'm going to arrest the mum. Like, that's going to help. And what I like is that this is a very cautious Lyft driver, right? So surely this child is in no safer hands than this particular Lyft driver.
Like, wouldn't you know that you're a good guy and you're not going to do anything? It's like, I could do anything.
Yeah, it's like, well, I can't be held responsible for this. I can't drive this unaccompanied minor to school. I'm going to drive this unaccompanied minor to a police station.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
And it's like, why is it so you can't put your kid in a car with a strange person, but you can take them to the police station where they'll be with all these strange adults.
There'll be even more strange people that they don't know and people that just happen to be in a police station.
Yeah, or take them to school where they'll also be under the supervision of strange adults that they don't know. I'm not sure what the...
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, just check the... What is your driver rating? Just check your own driver rating. It's like, oh, wait, 4.96. I am a good person.
Yeah, everyone loves me.
Yeah.
And it's all... So her options are to, like, make him catch the bus.
Yeah. A lot of strange people on the bus. A lot of strange people see kids walking.
I'm just not sure what her options were.
Yeah, exactly. It's like there is a big bad world out there, but, you know, most of the time you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Being my thing. All right. And I should point out the recorded cases of drivers in ride-sharing apps getting up to these things is remarkably low. But anyway, beside the point.
Because they have a rating.
Yes. Now, let us talk, finally, you saw a tweet, Pete, that you wanted to talk about.
Yes. Well, as we know, Twitter is now the news. So yes. If you
and
see,
Legal Tender. News and Legal Tender. It's a big platform.
That's true. It's growing in influence. So this was from our mate, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who provides us with a lot of content, which is why we love her. And she wrote a tweet saying, now, look, James, you're the funky young kid that gets the social media chat here.
But so basically, I'll fill people in and then you can come in. But basically, this meme format is going around at the moment, like the nobody and then someone responds to it. Mm. And it's basically just the idea of like no one's saying anything, everyone's just minding their business, but then in comes someone with a big opinion.
So she does that. She writes nobody, then she writes GOP. Let's pose our older male members next to cardboard cutouts of young female legislators, which is a creepy use of gender from her. And she's retweeted a tweet which is a picture of one of her colleagues, John Yarmuth, with a cardboard cutout of her. And someone has replied, this person called Joe Walsh, I'm not sure who they are, but they've written, AOC, FYI, the older male pictured is John Yarmuth, your colleague, and a Democrat. So AOC has obviously not gone to the get to know your teammates day.
No, definitely didn't do the whole say something interesting about you and we'll pass around the speaking ball.
The bowling and nachos day the Democrats had to get to know each other.
Yeah.
So awkward moment for all involved.
Awkward moment for all involved. I also want to say, that is a garbage use of that meme format, by the way.
Talk us through that.
Well, it's just like, it's supposed to be when someone comes in with a big bold opinion that no one asked for, and it's just a guy with a photo of a cardboard cutout. Like, I don't know. There's a million things you could have done with that photo. That meme format was not the one.
Imagine the next party meeting.
Yeah.
G'day, Alexandria. Obviously haven't made much of an impact with you. I'm on your team.
Yeah, well... Politicians are pretty forgettable people anyway. Now, that is it for the show this week. Thanks so much to Scott Hargraves and Renee Gorman for those interviews. Really interesting stuff. Make sure you're all going and becoming IPA members so you can read the IPA review and make sure you're reading Renee's article at ipa.org.au. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast and make sure you're also downloading and subscribing to the IPA's Looking Forward podcast, also available on all good podcast platforms. Make sure you're spreading the word about the podcast. Get any of your political family or friends involved. Make sure they're listening as well. And if you are listening through Apple Podcasts or iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. Maybe a tip for the show, maybe a story you saw, maybe something you want me and Pete to talk about. Nina, wrap this up for us, because if people are already subscribed to both podcasts and they do want to become an IPA member so they can get their hands on that review, where can people go?
Well, visit the website, sipa.org.au, and click on the join button. And starting as low as $22 per year, you can become one of the loudest voice of freedom in Australia.
Very cool. See you guys next week.
Stay up.